Nice. Welcome back to the Sharp at Tomorrow's podcast and episode 97. And my guest today is Natasha Whelehan, a life and career coach for cancer survivors. Prior to becoming a coach and setting up her own practice, she worked for over 10 years as a corporate recruiter, plus did a stint in HR in Australia and Northern Ireland. In 2017, Natasha was diagnosed with breast cancer as a young mom to two kids. She has experienced firsthand the emotional and physical impact of a cancer diagnosis and is passionate about supporting her clients in their journey as they navigate life after cancer. You're very welcome, Natasha.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here. Nerve-wracking, but lovely.
Yeah, and you know
Yeah.
what it is, myself and Natasha are having a little chat, and I've had many first timers that have never experienced podcast life and maybe never thought about it. But again, as we discussed, for me, the most important thing is storytelling, is sharing our stories, personal and otherwise, so that, as Natasha said, people don't feel alone when they're going through something that is as life-altering as cancer diagnosis. So, Natasha, I really appreciate you being here. And I
Oh,
know
thank you.
you're very open about your own story on social media and sharing with others. And I think that gives a sense of, not just that we're not alone, but that you got through it or are getting through it. And there are little tips and suggestions that you're giving out every other day, even like no such thing as a bad hair day. I remember seeing that, Natasha.
I know it's, do you know what it is? I'm coming up on 6 years from diagnosis, and I actually had a shower that day and got out, and I was like, oh, my hair's driving me mad because I'm trying to grow it out of a pixie cut. And then I was like, do you know what? It's not that long ago you had no hair. So, it just, I suppose one of the things about life after is you try and reframe things as best you can. But yeah, it's 6 years now in June that since I was diagnosed. So in some ways it's hard to believe it's been 6 years, and in others it feels like it was only yesterday. It's just one of those things, the impact and the ripple effect, it continues. And it doesn't just stop when treatment stops, it continues after treatment. And like, I'm actually still on medication, because the breast cancer I had was hormone driven, which means I take medication for up to 10 years to keep the estrogen in my own body suppressed. So for me, I'm still on treatment, so it definitely doesn't feel over in any way, shape, or form. But it's, yeah, it's just, it's how can it be 6 years? And then in other ways, sometimes it's like it feels like it was just this weird dream I had. It was like the lead character in some soap opera with a really bad storyline, and it was like all about me or something. And I'm like, I didn't have cancer, did I? And it feels very surreal. And then in other times, it's just the reality of it is very sharp and harsh, and you still can't get away from it. And I think that's something that is sometimes missed about life after cancer, that it doesn't stop. The day you have your last treatment, the ripple effect, both emotional and physical, continues, for many people long after treatment. And it's I think that's one of the things that very much motivated me to want to move into the coaching space, to try and offer that support. But yeah, 6 years feels like a big one.
Yeah, it is amazing. My mother is going through treatment, for the past 3 years as well, and she is amazing. And when she got her cancer diagnosed, I remember it was the first person in my family, that was very close to me, that it was like a kick in the gut, I suppose, really, because we hear of people that are diagnosed with cancer and somehow you feel like you're immune from it, that it happens to other people. It's like everything in life. But I remember when she told us, it was that shock. But you know what it was more than anything, Natasha? It's the word cancer itself. It has such a negative energy around it that
Completely.
I always say I wish they called it something else when they told people,
I know.
because I said to my mother that day, it's the word. It's not even the cancer or, the illness in your body. It's the word that has this fear that is connected with it, that the minute people hear it, they automatically assume you're going to die from it.
Yeah, it does have very negative connotations. It's one of those things. I remember chatting to a friend of mine. She came to visit me at the hospital, and her own mum would be quite elderly. And she said that her mother doesn't even say the word. She'd be like, they had, like big, and my friend will be there, and she'd be like, cancer, cancer, mom. Like, you can say it, you won't catch it by saying it. And it is, I think it is that it is something that, I mean, and chemo as well. People would be like, Asher, look at I'm, sure I'm not having chemo. Or people would even think, God, I could never face something like that. For me, like, the diagnosis part was kind of strange. I had a delayed diagnosis. So unfortunately, I had been symptomatic when I was pregnant. And look, when you're pregnant, everything's just all out of whack and different, and you've got lines and bumps and God knows what going on that you didn't have earlier. But
Absolutely, everything is stretching.
I felt like I was falling apart. Sure, I was about 37 weeks, and it was like, is this one ever getting out? Little girl, like, but I had this burning pain, and I hadn't experienced it on my first pregnancy. And unfortunately, the GP put it down to the milk ducts starting to just produce milk and being a bit clogged. And that would have been the end of 2016. No, the end of 2015. She was born in 2016. Can't even remember when I had my own child. So it took a while. The doctor thought it was nothing. The consultant at the hospital thought it was just pregnancy. Then you have the baby, and it's winter, and you have a toddler on the floor as well, and all sorts going on. And I had a C-section, so you're kind of sore all over. I was, and I just put down the continuing breast pain to being post-baby hormones. And it was about 8 months later, it still hadn't fully resolved. And I went back to the GP, and the GP was like, look at, it's probably nothing, you're still quite new to after having a baby, basically. So I saw a couple of more doctors, and they all thought, yeah, age-wise, you're probably fine. And eventually I did get seen at the clinic in James's, and I had a mammogram, and sure, by then there was lots of it. So it took me quite a while. So my own diagnosis was quite strange. It was like a gut punch, but at the same time, my first thing I said was, I knew it. I knew it. And I looked at my husband, I was like, I knew it. And there was this sense of, I'm not going crazy. I knew something was wrong in my body. So I do talk about that, because I feel it's very important for people to be aware that, say, breast cancer, obviously, which is my own personal experience, there's an assumption that it's a lump, and it doesn't always start with a lump. But also, if your inner voice is telling you something is very, very wrong, listen to it. Go get checked, like, stamp your foot a bit, ask to be seen. Because I had had some postnatal depression after my daughter was born. And to be honest, I was kind of like, I have this feeling that something's wrong, but everybody's telling me it's right. So it's probably just a bit of anxiety after, and I was like, I'm going mad, basically, or it's just a bit of, so yeah, so my first reaction was literally, I knew it. And, and that kind of kicked off the roller coaster, as we say, from there. So it was surgeries, and I had surgery first, and then on to chemo. And then through chemo and out the other side into radiotherapy, I had 6 weeks of that, and then continuing on. And that's another one of, I suppose, the, and this is the thing that I hear from people as well, is that people often aren't aware of what comes after, that you can still have side effects. Like, menopause is a big one, like, love the hot weather, but God, get a fan. I put it up on my blog. I was like, get a fan, girls. Like, if you're menopausal, you need one. But it's like everything. I in that initial period after treatment and going through treatment is very tough. And when you're in treatment, just go into survival mode and get through it. Eat what you have to eat, like, get some exercise, like get out and get out for walks. Good for the head, it's good for the body. Drink loads of water and do what you have to do to get through, and ask for help. I'm devil for that. Like, I'm like, I'll do it myself. I can do it myself. And, you know, but sometimes you do need help. And it's quite funny because the little girl I gave birth to back in 2016, she's exactly the same. She'll be standing there going, I can do it myself. And I'm like, oh God, I gave birth to me.
There's little me.
You know? So it's a big one I say to people when they're in treatment is just reach out. Like, even if it's something very simple, like, can you pick the kids up, or could someone drop around a bit of shopping for me, or whatever it might be, just to try there. You know, there are so many good supports out there. And, you know, it's about acknowledging that you are in this slightly different phase, but you will get through it. My mum always used to say, this too shall pass.
Yes.
And it's a quote that I continue to use, you know, and things pass. You know, you will get through it. Go one day at a time, go 1 hour at a time if you have to. And it will pass. But yeah, it was definitely an unexpected experience. You know, I was only 39 at the time, like, so.
And, you know, that's really interesting that you said that, and I'm so glad that you did, you know, that you said to your husband, you know, I knew it, that I had this feeling inside there was something wrong, and, you know, that you were ignored basically as well also by, you know, and it is to do that, because I know many people have told me in the past, they've gone maybe, you know, to whoever, and they've said, I feel like there is something wrong, and they've been kind of brushed aside and said, you'll be fine, you know, do this and that and the other. And then they've insisted, and like you, they've stamped their feet a little bit and said, I need this checked out. And then there was something there.
Yeah.
So I think we do know our own bodies. We know when it's not acting as it should, or when something feels different. And it is to listen to that, because our body, I always say our body is giving us signals all the time to things that are wrong with us, and we ignore them. And for me, a lot of the time when I'm working with people, they'd say, you know, it started off as a small pain, and then the pain got worse, and it wasn't until I couldn't move that I went and got it checked out. And it may not have been a diagnosis like you, Natasha, but it could have been something that was going on structurally, you know, with their bones or their joints or something like that, or, you know, whatever it can be. So I think you're absolutely right in saying that if you're in any doubt or if you're worried, go and get it checked out. And I think now the age for... how would you say it, routine mammograms is 50. Is that right, Natasha?
Yeah,
so
it
then
needs to be
you're
lowered.
Going, it does need to be lowered, because we've heard of so many young women that have been diagnosed with breast cancer, and they're told, like you, you're too young. It must, you know, I think if anybody is not sure, or if they had symptoms like you've had, that they need to push for the mammogram and to get themselves looked after, just for peace of mind, or to not be walking around going, how long has this been going on, undiagnosed, and then the fear of that. But coming back to you, I'm hearing the diagnosis and hearing those famous words that so many people have heard, you know,
got cancer
and you knew it. But what was that feeling inside? What was it, apart from the gut punch? But what was it? Was there a sense of relief that now you could name it?
Do you know, it sounds insane, but yes. Yes, in that initial moment, it was also, I'm not going mad. There is something there, like, you know, And for me, my first question after the I knew it was, will my daughter get this? She was only 17 months at the time. And the first person I thought of was her. Because, well, she's only seven now. She's seven going on 17. But anyway, don't get me started on her. The other fella's 10 and he's very preteen at the moment. So
it's entertainment. You have it all going on.
It's entertainment in this house. But yeah, she was the first person I asked about. I didn't ask about myself. I asked about her. And the doctor, lovely man. I had the nicest surgeon. He was just lovely, like really, really lovely, lovely man. He was like, you know, she'll be observed, you know, like, and it's actually always been a comfort to me. It's like, I really wish I hadn't had cancer, but I do find comfort where I can. And one of the things is very much that if she goes in anywhere with so much as a pimple on her breast and tells them that her mother was diagnosed with cancer in her 30s, she will be taken seriously. And I'm like, okay, you know, that's good. And as she gets older, I will educate her about it and about, you know, checking and so on. But at the moment, she just thinks it's kind of funny that mommy only has one boobie. She says, you know, so it's just a
but
form
to her, that's her normal. You
yes,
know,
she doesn't
and in
remember
a way,
any different.
Yeah, and it's lovely in a way as well that children see their parents as not all being the same, you know, because yeah. I always say we have different types of families now, you know, and that, you know, I think as well for parents not to be hiding things from their children, you know, and saying, this is mom, this is the way she is, you know, and then as she gets older, explaining more about it and use that education as well. I think it's really important to be open and honest with your children, you know, age appropriate talk, of course, with them. But
use
I think
the right
you're
language.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And for you then, you know, starting your treatment and all of that, how was your relationship with your husband affected by that? Because I always say to people, it's not just you going through it. It's your partner, or it could be your mother, brother, sister, whoever is closest to you at the time. What was it like even for him, or communicating with him?
It was very tough. Like it's like a vortex. It just sucks in everybody around you and you're at the center of it, you know. It was very tough, like, because he was working full time in Dublin. Now, luckily, he was able to work from home because we live in the Midlands. Sorry, I said I have a cold. And that was very tough. You know, he had... like, we had a very typical sort of family structure. Mommy was at home with the kids. He was gone 12, 14 hours a day. I had just kind of looked after the kids and, you know, we did our stuff at the weekend. It was all very normal, very, very boring, very, very, you know, 2-point like kids and whatever. And then all of a sudden it was like the world just blew up around us. And, you know, he was trying to work from home and make space to work. And, you know, about a few months into it, we did, you know, he did take some parental leave because it was just extremely challenging trying to mind two small children. I was, you know, I was very lucky in that my mom did actually come and stay in the town and she was there to kind of give me some support. I had some complications as well. I had a mastectomy wound infection after my first chemo. It led to another surgery and that placed more pressure on my husband. You know, he was trying to pick up the pieces, manage everything and like be strong, but at the same time he was obviously very worried. You know, I'm his wife, like we argue over the socks on the floor, but he didn't want me to keel over, like, you know. And then like when you're going through treatment, when you're a younger patient and you're hit with chemo, it puts you into menopause. And it's what they call, the doctors will literally refer to it as a hard menopause. Now, you're told very little about it when it's happening, but it does happen. So you've got chemo, steroids, which make you a bit batty at the best of times. And you hit this really hard menopause. Your hormones drop off a cliff. So it is like your worst case of PMS ever, you know, magnified, combined with steroid, combined with chemo. So when I look back, I probably wasn't great to be around, you know, because it really is the emotional impact of that instant menopause combined with steroids. So, you know, we limped through it. We were very much there for each other and we were, you know, he was supporting me. But those days where we were driving each other mad, I'm not going to lie about it. I think sometimes you look at TV shows or something and it's all very, you know, partner is like putting a damp cloth to the forehead and picking everything up and everything's grand and, you know, but it's actually, you are still a family with small children and small children needs and
the pressures of life, daily life, finances, work, meals, all the normal things, laundry.
Toddlers who won't eat dinner and, you know, and then the kids kept getting sick. They got chicken pox and chest infections. Every time I turned around, one of them had some sort of disease that I couldn't be near because of the chemo and because I'd had delays. So yeah, like, I mean, it's actually a huge challenge. You know, we found it very, very hard. Like, we got through the other side. But there is a picking up of the pieces afterwards. It's a trying to kind of reframe your relationship after this hurricane that you've been through. But, you know, like I couldn't have got through it without my husband. You know, I really couldn't have. Like, he was brilliant. You know, he was there the day I was diagnosed. He was the one who rang my mom, because I was like, you ring her and tell her, because she's going to be upset, and just give her that moment to be upset and you tell her. And, you know, he was the one who read the book to our son and told our son that mommy has something called cancer. And, you know, like, he kept the ship afloat. But oh yeah, we had some interesting conversations through it when I was on steroids, you know. And it's and that's normal. It actually is. It's and I don't think it's talked about.
I think that's what is for real life for me, as you said, you know, talking about it's not just going in for treatment and what you're eating and, you know, you're exercising. It's the relationships, because they're so vitally important for you as you're going through, you know, with the diagnosis, you know, who is there with you, who is there to support you, that they understand, you know, they'll never understand what you're going through because they can't feel it, but they're watching. And it's like, how are they responding to it also? And, you know, sometimes you may want to scream at them and say, do you not know what I'm going through? But they don't. And they're trying to support you the best they can. And it comes back to that thing that you're in a relationship and you have children together, and he didn't sign up for this. You didn't sign up for this diagnosis. It's part of the unplanned life that we have.
The in sickness and in health part of the vows. I was like, oh, look, we got the in sickness pretty quick.
Yes, which many people do. But again, it's the reality of when you're going through it. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that I always say is talk about the real life stuff, because that's what real people are listening to, you know, not the flouncy stuff, as you said, with the cloth on the partner's head and I'm here and I'm devoted. You know, sometimes the husbands or the wives are screaming, going, oh, for fuck's sake, I just wish they'd hurry up and get better and stop being so sick, because it is a frustration. It is. It's something, as I said, nobody is planned for. But in that, you know, the reality of it and the lovely moments of support and keeping the ship afloat and everything for you, were you afraid? Did you ever consider that, what if I pass away?
Yes.
What if I don't survive this?
Yeah, I did. I think for me, one of the worst days wasn't the day I got diagnosed, because that day they kind of thought it might be something called DCIS. You know, are a very small sort of early stage tumor. You know, the plan looked quite, you know, this looks small, we can deal with this. It was after they did something called a sentinel node biopsy, where they take some lymph nodes from under your arm, and it's to check, has the cancer spread into the lymph nodes? Has it gone beyond the breast tissue? And mine had. And that was the moment I panicked. I was like, this is really bad. You know, that was, you know, I never really tended to cry in front of the doctors. I was always quiet, but we got out of the hospital and I had a good cry that day. And I was like, what if I die? You know, I mean, start, like, the kids were so small, you know, so, so small. And it was, you know, I can remember I had my biopsy on the Thursday, and we knew, like, we kind of knew anyway, there was very obvious what was on the screen. We were back in on the Tuesday, which in itself was a bit of a giveaway. But my son's preschool, some of the kids were graduating. Now, a preschool graduation is possibly the cutest thing in the world. It's ridiculously cute, like, you know. So that was on the Saturday. So my son wasn't in the graduating class. He still had a year to go, but some of his little friends were. So we went to this graduation on the Saturday, and I can just remember standing there thinking, God, like, who cares about college graduations? I just want to see him graduate preschool, you know. And I was like, I shouldn't be having that thought. Used to get, like, I remember having a mad morbid thought one time. I got it into my head to clean out the cupboard when I was going through treatment, and I found this box of cornflakes, and, you know, the way they last for years. And I was like, what if this doesn't work? Like, will the cornflakes outlast me? You know, and it was just crazy stuff, you know. So yeah, like, oh yeah, very much it did. It did cross my mind. And then I tend to be someone who researches and wants to know what's going on. So I went on Dr. Google, which, by the way, Don't go on Dr. Google. Dr.
No.
Google, you'll just be out measuring yourself up for a coffin and doing God knows what. It's a disaster. But I did have a look at, once I finished with Dr. Google, I did look at some kind of reputable sites and I wanted to understand what I had as best as I could. And I started to realize, actually, do you know what? This is treatable. Hopefully, like, once I go through this treatment, I'll be on this hormone therapy. Cancer can recur, and there can be such a thing as late recurrence, and that's a reality. And that's a big fear that you navigate afterwards. But for me, it was finding out that actually, you know what, I do have a good shot at this being okay. So it was like, okay, but yeah, oh yeah. And the steroids, you're awake in the middle of the night, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, all the crazy thoughts start.
I see my
All
mother.
the
We call
crazy
her like the
thoughts.
Energizer Bunny. On the Thursday, she has her treatment. She comes home, and it's the best time if you want to clean out your closets because she's so much
She's all this
energy.
energy,
She's
yeah.
go, 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 and she wants to do
Yeah.
everything. And all night, then she eventually maybe gets an hour's sleep, and the
Yeah.
Saturday or Friday, and eventually by Saturday, then she's on the come down
Yeah.
from them, you know. So
Yeah,
we've
it
seen it
hits.
firsthand, yeah. But now it doesn't frighten us. We know now what to expect.
It's a
So I
long
think
time.
there's kind of comfort in that as well, if you kind of know the pattern, you know, so you kind of know when they'll be up and when they'll be down, you know, and to notice kind of anything in between, you know. That's why I think it's good to have family support or friendship support, that they can be an advocate for you, as well as going, you weren't that sick the last time. Maybe this isn't right now, you know. Maybe you should actually call your doctor and say this is happening, or whatever it is.
It is important, I agree.
Yeah.
And it's and you do fall into a pattern, you know, you really do. And I'd say to people going through it is when you get to know your pattern, work your life around it.
Yeah.
And you can still do things. Like my kids were very small, but I remember taking my little girl to the playgroup Halloween party. And like I had treatment and then on the Wednesday. So the next day I got up and I had like this massive coffee and took my steroids. So I'd have a little boost of energy and packed her into her buggy and off we went to the playgroup Halloween party, you know, and then got home and I knew kind of when the crash would come. So we started to like plan life around when things would hit. Of course, kids still go off and get bugs and chicken pox and do all sorts of shenanigans that mess up the best laid plans, but you definitely can. And it's trying to continue to live around it as well. I think for me, I was very determined not to let it take away all of me. You know, it was like, I have
Love that.
this, it doesn't have me.
Yeah.
To the point that I probably annoyed people because I was very determined to keep doing certain things myself. And my husband or my mom would be like, "Would you not rest?" And I'm like, "No, I don't need to rest. Fine."
Yeah. I think it's kind of important though, Natasha, as well, because we do see many people, and when they get the diagnosis, they nearly have themselves dead and buried, you know, that they're not going to get through this. And again, they get very anxious and then very depressed, and then the physical body, the immunity goes down, and you know, the tiredness, the exhaustion, all of the things that you have to go through.
It's hard.
But what were the things? Because I read that you did a lot of journaling and gratitude practice. And I love that because, again, with anybody that I work with or through groups that I've met in the past, I would say that any diagnosis, whether it be physical, mental, or emotional, you know, that it's only a little part of us. It's not the whole lot of us, and that we have much more to us. Like you were a wife and you were a mom, but there was also Natasha, you know, who she was and who she is. But I love the fact now is like, who am I going to be after this? But while you're going through it, did you have that as you were journaling and you were using the gratitude practice for the little blessings, as we call them, in your life? Was there a part of you that was saying there's more to life than what I've been already doing? Or what way did it hit you?
For me, it was I think I was kind of in survival mode during treatment. I think, you know, the surgeries were easier than the chemo. During the chemo, it was very much in survival mode. It was just get through this, get through this, get through this. Radiotherapy, I felt like I was kind of coming up for air again, almost. So I was reading a lot on the train and, you know, like I started to make it my little day out. Sure, like I'd be getting up, I'd go in, and you know, I'd have my coffee, and you know, it's nothing like a coffee that's hot and you're having on your own when you've got toddlers, like, because they'll follow you
Oh,
anywhere.
yeah.
So I was like, look, let's just look at this in a way that I can find something positive in it. But yeah, I mean, it's I was thinking, what do I want after this? Like I had been a recruiter, I had been on a career break. We had relocated to the Midlands with the intentions of me taking 6 months off, and then I'd fallen pregnant. And I had actually been starting to think about looking for work in 2017, and of course, the C bomb dropped.
Yeah.
So in 2018, I said to my husband, I was like, I'm going to stay at home with the kids until they are both in school. And that was kind of a decision that was made. That was something I had come to during treatment, that actually, no, I want this extra little bit of window of time with them. And then, you know, I had a few complications. I developed cellulitis and lymphedema and that. So it, as it turned out, it was probably lucky I had stayed home, because
Yeah.
just the way things played out. But then I was doing some writing for a friend. She had an online cancer support magazine. You know, and I was really enjoying that. And, you know, I was like, I liked being part of that sort of community that was giving something back. You know, but then she unfortunately was rediagnosed and has since died. And I think her rediagnosis and, you know, losing her, I kind of just went into a bit of a, I don't really know what I want to do with my life here. So I did go back to work in 2021, and I went back to work as a recruiter. Because you do what you know. There's
Yeah.
comfort in discomfort. You know, there really is. There's comfort in the discomfort. So I went back to what I knew, you know, and did a couple of different shorter term jobs. And then I had a really good job with a lovely agency who I couldn't praise highly enough. They were lovely. But I just knew I wasn't aligned with my own values at this point, because during the periods, like from finishing treatment up to then, I had been for counseling, and I highly recommended. It really helped me in the moment, because I was struggling with fears of recurrence, and because of my delayed diagnosis, I had few trust issues with the doctors, and that helped there. But I was still floundering. You know, I was trying different things. I was like, I'll do some Reiki, I'll exercise, I'll do some yoga, I'll journal. Gratitude was always there. Even if I wasn't writing it down, like, you know, you can just go out for a walk and say, isn't it a lovely day? I'm so glad I'm here. You know, it's such a simple thing, but you finding those little moments in the day really do help. But yeah, it was, I had come to coaching because I had volunteered to be a client for someone, and I really liked it. I was like, oh, this makes you think about where you're going and how to get there. So I did a course and loved the course. So I did another one as I'm wont to do. I finished one and I was like, I'm going to sign up for the add-on. So I've done two diplomas. But anyway, that's just my nature. I'm like, I kind of learn something and then I'm like, I have to learn everything about it. I have to learn more and learn more and learn more. So last year, though, when I was back at work and I was just working full time, I was doing 2 days up in Dublin, you know, you'd be gone 13 hours a day. And because the coaching, I'd worked on my values and I had really thought about what was important to me, I knew very quickly that what I was doing wasn't aligned with who I wanted to be. I had kind of tried to get back to who I was almost before kids and before cancer, instead of focusing on who I was right now and where I wanted to go. So to be honest, it was quite easy to make the decision to step away from my job. Now, don't get me wrong, there was lots of, oh, should I be doing this? That word should, it should actually be banned. There, I'm using it.
There you go, it should be
There I
banned.
go. It should be banned, but I'd love it to be banned. But we should on ourselves. And so I said, no, I'm gonna focus on coaching. And when I was deciding what area I wanted to coach with, lots of people did say to me, do I really want to work with cancer survivors? They said, will that not be too triggering? And I was like, no, because I was drawn to it. I was like, this is something that I really feel can help people, because we finish and trying to figure out where to go next, or what's important to you, or who you want to be, or, you know, some people want to get back to life before, and that's not always possible. So how do you move forward? Some people come out of treatment and just go, I am never going back to the way I was. I was running myself into the ground. I was stressed. I had no boundaries. And they want to start putting those things in place. And coaching can be a fantastic space for that. So that was where I followed my heart in the end. I went with what, you know, and I think I've been kind of doing more of that lately. It's where you follow what you're drawn to rather than what you think you should do. Don't get me wrong, I still should on myself. I'm human. But
and that's only, again, as you said, normal. Yeah, but I think when you have the awareness and understanding of, well, okay, I did everything I was supposed to do, and I got cancer, and then I went through the treatment, and I'm still, you know, receiving treatment. But what would I like to do? What really is passionate for me? You know, what do I feel a purpose in? And I think that's why coaching, but the route you chose, you know, in saying I'll do the course and do the diploma, and then I loved it, that was you following that inner calling that many people ignore until sometimes they have a huge adversity or challenge or obstacle in their life, and then they realize what I thought was really important before is not as important now, and there's something else calling me, and that I have now an opportunity to go out and live the life I really want to live. I think that is so beautiful. But some people have that fear of change. And as you said, maybe wanting to go back to the way it was. I don't think we can ever go back anyway. I think we can only go forward.
I agree.
And I love that you're working with cancer survivors in a number of ways. So it's general life coaching, supporting people as they discover what is important to them now. I love that, because right now, what is important? Our values could have changed. My values have changed. From when I was a single person to when I became a mother as of young children, of adolescents, of adult children, my values have changed along the way. Look at life differently, and my perspective changes, as it does with most people. So what do these cancer survivors want to bring forward into their life after cancer, and what they want to leave behind? I think that is so important that you put that in there, Natasha, because what was not serving us? What was the stress within our body that created this unwellness or this dis-ease? You know, and I would always say, and people will argue with me, and I will say, most of illness that's caused in this world is from a stressor somewhere along the way.
There are some who'll agree and some who don't. I know I was very stressed in the years leading up to my diagnosis. So sometimes I wonder, you know, it's, and it's
for me, it's something I would always say. So if somebody was to say to me, and it doesn't have to be as serious, like as getting a cancer diagnosis, but they have an issue with their back for years and years and years, and they've been to everybody and nobody can find anything. And we go back and I'll say, okay, well, let's start off. When is the first time you remember even a little twinge? And they'll go, oh, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah. And it'll be something random.
And what was going on in your life at that time? And then they go, oh my God, that was an awful time.
Yeah. And
and now, and then you go, really? And you've been carrying that on your back all of these years until your back and your body went, no way, now I have to stop because I can't carry it any longer in the energy. So for me, there's always a connection somewhere. And I know some people will disagree, and that's absolutely fine, because it's not for me to be right. It's just what I have seen and experienced with people, including my mother, over the years.
There are definitely some people I, you know, it is one of those things. It's like, what was it I said one day? I was chatting to one of the guys taking my blood, and I was like, you know, it's like a cell went wrong one day and it just kept going. And he's like, yeah, that's pretty much it, actually, like, you know, and sometimes the trigger for that cell going wrong, it can just be sheer bad luck, because that does happen. There is a genetic component. And then for other people, who knows, maybe it was multiple different factors. I do know for me, stress was a very big factor in my life in the years leading up to the diagnosis. And it is something I try and manage now. And I try and manage it for a number of different reasons. One of them being, my mental health is precious, because my mental health has been challenged. It was challenged before I had my children, and it was challenged after I had my children, and then it was challenged after I had cancer. I had periods where I was very up and down. In hindsight, some of them I think might have been the hormonal fluctuations as well as everything else. But when you're in it, you don't really see it. And lack of sleep. I had horrific insomnia after I finished treatment, which went on for a long time. But you know, I do think managing that stress, you know, looking after your mind, the mind-body connection is very real. If you're looking after your mind and your body to the best of your ability, there's not much else that is valuable, really, is there? It's protect your mind and your body will feel better. Protect your body, your mind will feel better. The two are very intimately connected.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's something
they are
I'm,
so connected.
And it's I feel it myself. You talk about the back pain and I'm like, oh God, sure, I always had back pain when I was working a desk job, but it was partly the physiological sitting like this all day and then partly just stress. You know, and it's interesting though. I'm sure you see lots of things coming through.
Yeah, and you know, you smile and sometimes I don't smile because it's again, what you said was very important at the start. You know when something is not right, but you're not listening, you're avoiding, or you're not being told it's nothing, but something is still there. And many people, hundreds of people I've met over the years, and they said, I knew there was something wrong, or I just ignored that pain, or my shoulder was at me for years. So energetically, I believe we hold on to so many different emotions within our body, you know, and our cellular memory, and you're going back to the cell again, Natasha.
Yeah.
You know, and how much trauma and pain and stress can the body deal with?
Yeah.
You know, we put it under tremendous stress. And again, going through treatment, your body, even though you're trying to get well, your body is going through tremendous stress, isn't
like,
it?
Chemo is, it's, I, what did I say to my oncologist one time? It was the friend I love to hate. You know, I very much, very quickly early on, like, after the first dose, I was a bit like, okay, we need to reframe how we look at this guy because it's not fun. So it was very much like, you know, they're like little Pac-Men going in there and they're like, gobble, 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 and just picture it gobbling up any stray cancer cells. And think of it as it is your friend. You might not like it very much, but it's that frenemy, you know, the friend you love to hate, but it's so hard on the body.
Very
so hard. But it is doable. It is doable. And I say to people, if you are struggling with side effects or nausea, speak to the oncologist. They can give you more drugs. You know, they can tweak something. They can change something. They don't want us at home. Like the days of, you know, like the 1970s or early 80s movies where someone was lying on the floor vomiting consistently. That shouldn't be the case for the bulk of people if they're on treatment. They can do so much to help. You know,
and I think even having the, again, that open communication with your oncologist or, you know, who's looking after you, because even though my mother was going through it and she had a reaction to the chemo she was on and she was violently ill, but like that, she said, oh, but everybody's sick. And I said, no, they are not. I said, not everybody is this sick. It doesn't have to be this bad. You need to go in and get checked out. It's not right. And it was, she had to change the chemotherapy drug because it was so vile. She had a violent reaction on her. So again, it's not to say it should be like that. No, it's just normal to be that unwell. It's not. I think you really have to have open communication.
So
again, these are the real things that we talk about, because again, it's to have an idea. You might know someone that's going through it and they might look great on the outside, but how are they really? Are you checking in and going, how are you? Because I think it's up for the people around as well, friends and neighbors and families, to really show their support to each other, you know, because people take it for granted now. I'm sure every second person is going through cancer and they get through it, or they just, do you know,
they've
become so blasé about it.
And it's I think, it, you know, there can almost be, it's like a pressure almost to be positive.
Yes.
Yeah. Toxic positivity. You know, it's a very real phenomenon. And like, I know it's such a difficult topic. You know, people do feel very uncomfortable talking about cancer. It's very emotive. But, you know, if someone is going through treatment, like if you're going to ask them how they're feeling, and they say, actually, I feel like shite or whatever, you know, it's, it's because that's how they're feeling. It's do your best to hold space for them. You might not know what to say, and that's
But just
okay.
be there, be
Yeah,
there.
even just say, I don't know what to say, but like, I'm here. I think one of the most hurtful things that can happen during a cancer journey for people is when people who they perhaps thought would be available to them aren't, but then the support comes from a different source. I do believe that, someone who you weren't expecting to step up and offer to do things will, people who you did think would step up don't, but support is there.
And I
People
think that
do come.
saying that, Natasha, as well, one of the things that I would work on is saying, when those people you believed would be there and they can't be there, won't be there, it's because they're not emotionally and mentally able to be there. And again, we can see it. Well, the one time I need them and they're just not around, I'd say a lot of people don't know what to say. They're, so they stay away because they're just so uncomfortable in it. And, the person that has going through the cancer treatment will say, but I'm uncomfortable. I'm going through it.
I
What's
know.
wrong with them? And I said, again, it's
Yeah,
having compassion for
it is.
yourself and others that, not everybody knows what to say or do. I'm great at holding space and being there. But sometimes with my mother, it was even a struggle because I wanted her to be well. And I
And
didn't
she's
want to
not.
see her unwell. And again, that's what I said. There's family members out there listening, and they're not sure what to do and when to do it.
Just hold that space.
Hold the
Hold that
space, sit
space.
there, be there. And again, let them know that if they need anything, that you will be there. It might be the practical things that could be the really important things. It doesn't have to be always the hugging and the crying
No.
with them. It can be just
Sometimes you don't
cleaning.
want that. Not
No.
at all. You want to be like getting out and having a bit of crack, or
Yeah.
go see a
Invite me out
movie,
for
or
dinner or a walk. Yeah.
don't go to the cinema, go out for coffee, go do stuff, get out and enjoy as much as you possibly can, because you can, you absolutely can. And yes, if someone really doesn't know what to say on the emotional side, say like, oh, I'm down the shop tomorrow. Do you want me to pick anything up and I'll drop it up to you? But
Yeah.
specific offers of help are great. Or here, I'm collecting the kids. I'll grab yours and bring them home
Oh,
to you. Something like that.
perfect.
Simple little things, but just mean so much. Practical help. But yes, it's 100%. If someone is feeling that someone who they expected to be there wasn't, that can be hurtful. But it's not about the individual. It is, that person has something that they're carrying, and their
They
own
can't deal
pain or
with.
their own discomfort. And it is difficult to be there when someone's going through illness. And it's about showing yourself compassion and saying it's not about me, and showing them compassion, and then just see where things go afterwards. But it does
Absolutely.
happen, and it's definitely something I hear as well. It can be
And I love the
surprising for
fact as
people.
well that you said, I'm always saying sometimes we have to let go of the old, create space for something new to come in, a new opportunity or a new person. So even like that, if those people we believed we could rely on are not there, there's another opportunity for somebody else to come in and give us the support we need at the right time, so that
100%.
it's not, to look at it from both sides. That's what I would always say.
No, I
So I'm
agree.
aware of the time
No, you're
with
fine.
you, Natasha, and small kids, but career coaching, you draw it on your extensive experience as a recruiter, and this can include job search, managing work boundaries, interview preparation, right through to supporting someone as they step towards recovery. I love that. And you're doing a 90-minute focus coaching session in June, a summer special.
Yeah, it's sometimes like, okay, career coaching is one piece. That's very much around, it could be career change or getting back to work. And HR and recruitment was my background, so I kind of said, well, I'm going to take the bits of it I loved and bring it forward, which is what I try and say to people. But sometimes what you want to do. You just have one little goal that you want to work on, and a 90-minute session, get right in there. And it can be something like, I want to create some space in my day to do some exercise. Right, let's look at your day, let's break it down. Where is the space? What's blocking you? Or it can be, some people like to come and work on putting together some strategies for managing that fear of recurrence. So that can be around things like, how can we calm the body? Let's look at this. We use cognitive behavioral coaching techniques there, and then just some practical tools, and to try and give someone they walk away from the session with two or three things that they're like, okay, I've got a pain in my big toe. Is it cancer? No, it's not. How do we deal with it? You know?
Yeah.
So it tends to be those type sessions if someone has something very particular that they want to work on, and we can get right into it there. And then I offer WhatsApp and email support for the week afterwards. So that way, if they want to come back to me, and I'm doing that over the month of June for just €50. Because I'm like, yeah, so it could be a really nice one, you know, because it's a nice way to dip your toe into coaching, but also just to kind of, like, when do we ever give ourselves space and time to talk about what we want to do? And
yes,
to actually talk about, this is what I'd love to do, but that'll never happen. And to have someone sit across from you and listen to you and hold that space for you, but also help you get unstuck and start thinking about, well, how can I start making some steps towards making it happen? Because that's what coaching is. It's about, where do you want to get to and how do you get there? We try and get people unstuck.
And seeing the potential that they haven't seen themselves. I love that.
Yes.
When you kind of go, oh my God, you have this and this. Have you ever thought of putting them together? And they go, never thought of that.
Or you know, you're talking to people and they'll recite everything that they've gone through or that they've been experiencing. And then you kind of look at them and you're like, my God, you're so resilient and strong. And they're like, no, I'm not. And I'm like, if you heard someone say what you've just told me, what would you say? And they'll be like, oh, I think they were amazing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of reflecting back to people what we see as coaches and, you know, helping them. Like, that's what I love. I love the forward movement and I love the even pick a tiny step. What's the tiniest little step that you can take that's going to help you start moving towards that goal, that dream? And for me, it was when I did the coaching, when I first had the opportunity to be a coachee, to be a client, I was like, oh, I'd love to do that. And I didn't do it. I didn't do it for over 2 years because I was like, oh, I wouldn't be able to do that. Or how would I do that? Or, oh, I couldn't do that. You know, all this, like, I couldn't fit that in and blah, 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 blah. And then I just signed up one day. I was like, I'm going to do this. And, you know, it started moving me towards the life that I want to live. But I think we're constantly creating that next chapter. And that's what it is. It's cancer has to be a chapter. It's the chapter in the book. Let's not make it the whole book. We can still write so much around it. I still have lymphedema in my arm. I have, you know, I've actually had a hip surgery recently. I've got crutches. And there's these things and they are happening, but it's let them happen and then keep thinking about moving forward, not getting sucked down into that vortex, because I definitely did get sucked into the vortex for the first year or two. I did my best to keep moving forward, but it took me a while to work out what the next steps were. And that's why coaching really spoke to me as something that could help cancer survivors, because let's start getting people moving forward faster, and it doesn't have to be fast. Well, I use faster loosely. It can literally be those little tiny steps. Take 5 minutes for yourself in the morning, go outside and take 5 minutes daylight while you drink your cup of coffee, and it's going to help your sleep. And small steps, they all add up.
That's lovely. Natasha. And I think what's really beautiful about, you know, even the area of supporting cancer survivors is that they're seen and you have the lived experience and that you understand the jargon and the emotional and mental side, but the physical side of it, of course, is a huge issue, but that you can relate to them and they don't feel like I'm talking to someone and they haven't a clue what I've experienced in my life, whereas you have. And I think that's a really, really important space that you have created now for anybody that wants to. I think it's really vitally important. You know, because people say, get on with it now. But what do I get on with? Do I stay doing the same or do I change? Because I'm not sure where I fit in any longer. And they're caught in this little space that they feel a little bit trapped or unsure. And it's lovely to have somebody like you there to support them. So I just think you are amazing and you are amazingly resilient with everything that you've gone through and are going through and still wanting to support others out there as they go through it. I think you were amazing, and I think you will make an amazing coach and support for so many people out there that are listening.
I hope so. It's those unseen parts of the journey afterwards. That's what I want to help with. And you know, it's like there is life after cancer, like there is, and it can be a really good life, you
Yeah.
know, but when you're in it, it just doesn't feel like that sometimes.
Yeah.
But sometimes part of that life after cancer is accepting that things are a bit different, that maybe you don't have the same energy, or you know, you can't drag home three loads of shopping on the one arm like I used to do, because you know, it's simple things, but still things. You know, and there can be, when you accept it and come to that acceptance, and then you can start looking to the future, because there is a future. More and more and more people are surviving. More and more people have advanced cancer, but are still living really good lives and are being treated as chronic patients. You know, and I have friends who are in that situation, and they're doing brilliant. So yeah, it's you know, life after cancer can be really good, but I think sometimes we have to take back a bit of control and start creating it. That's kind of,
Absolutely.
I
And I
waffle on
think
about that a
that's
lot,
what,
creating, but it's
yeah, it
important.
is. It really is. And I think that's a lovely way to finish this chat because it is about creating the space for yourself and the opportunities for yourself, and that it doesn't become everything about your life because, as I said, it's only a small part of Natasha Whelan, and you have so much more to offer. And you're probably the greatest mammy to your kids, even with the
Don't
one
ask them
boob. Yeah, well, I do
that.
say that, you know, but at the end of the day, they wouldn't pick anyone else over you.
No, they
That's the thing.
wouldn't.
And, you know, while we do our best, Natasha, even without the struggles and without cancer diagnosis, we're all doing our best. And I
Exactly.
think it's to have those open conversations and say it as it is. And, you know, that it's not always fabulous. And, you know, I don't always look like my hair is washed. And even when I have a bad hair day, it's great to have hair.
Exactly, because it is. There's a lot to be said for
Absolutely,
it.
it
It's
is.
been lovely.
Natasha.
Thank you so much.
Oh my God, you're so welcome. And thank you for coming on. I'm delighted it's your first podcast and
It was
that you've
fun.
got to, like, I know you're sharing your story and you're out there helping others, but I just think the conversation for someone else to listen back to and hear all parts of it is going to be really important for somebody out there, for
I hope
many
so.
people, but maybe one person in particular really needed to hear this today.
Exactly. And it is, and it can be those little moments. Like, I know it is, it's the little glimpses of light at the end of the tunnel. You latch onto them. That's why 6 years, I would have loved to see someone 6 years out when I was diagnosed. You know, it's, and I still love looking at people who are 10 years and 15 years. Someone messaged me the other day and she's 19 years out from cancer. I nearly
Wow.
cried with joy. I was just like, I love it,
Oh,
you know. So
yeah. Because
there.
that's giving yourself that hope to focus on rather
Exactly.
than, you know, as we look at, as you said, statistics and numbers and all of those things. But they are getting better and people are living longer. And you know what? They're still able to live a good life. So I
Very
think
good
that's what,
life.
yeah, you're
Live your
after giving
best
us
life.
that best life. I love it.
Okay.
So
All
you can
right.
check out Natasha on Instagram at natasha_coachingafter.cancer and her website is www.natashawhelehan.com. Excuse me, I'll be putting them all up in the show notes
Thank you.
anyway, so people can click in, follow you, or if they want to DM you or check out your website and pop along and follow Natasha on Instagram and you will see her posts that she is helping to educate and inspire us all. Natasha, thank you so much
Well, thank
again.
you. I've had great fun, so thank you very
Oh,
much.
I'm so
All right.
delighted. Thank you,
Thanks.
everyone, for listening, and we will chat again very soon.